Everybody, welcome to Tuesday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. Kevin Harry alongside, as always, take you to 3 and it off our good friend Phil Benatti. Normally 3 to 6 without Joe behind the bench today, 2 hours until 5. And then he and Paul Meadows will take the very short trip from the studio to Bullard High School, right across the street, as a matter of fact. And it will be an outstanding basketball game between Memorial and Bullard tonight, 6:15, the pre. So stay tuned for that. The Sharks are over on 790 tonight. I'll go over the schedule for both stations, for both the matchups tonight, hockey and basketball, and for the rest of the week and leading up to the Super Bowl in a little less than 2 weeks. A little bit later on, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. Talk about every day. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. When we go over the schedule for both stations, I'll tell you what Ed does in the way of fundraising for the Lyles College of Engineering on campus at Fresno State. Jackson with me for a Tuesday visit that will entail Bulldog football and Bulldog basketball. We'll get to our de facto co-host in a moment, but first, other lead dogs. As always, want to spend some time with you, starting with our buddies at KFC, the local operators in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. So many great deals going on right now at KFC. On a Tuesday, you still have the $10 eight-piece or eight tenders offer. They also have a new offer for a 10-piece bucket. They've always got the country fried steak on Wednesdays on sale. They've got their pot pies. They've got their $5 bowls. And that's where we want to start today. In addition to the fact that, as we mentioned the last couple of weeks, they've now started that terrific Zinger chicken sandwich. But for today, I'll tell you about the $5 bowls offered up either classic or spicy. We're talking creamy mashed potatoes, sweet corn, melty cheese, and crispy nuggets all stacked in one bowl. You can go classic or you can bring the heat with the bold spicy flavor. Either way, a terrific deal for $5. And also you can grab the $5 Maddie's Cheesy Nuggy Gravy Bowl. That's crispy nuggets, rich gravy, and plenty of cheese. Boy, that sounds great right now. No shortcuts at KFC. Big flavor, big comfort, just $5 at the local KFCs. For a limited time, so jump on in, Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman, or take your car if you'd like. It's fine with me if you want to jump in. You might want to walk in first, but either way, or take your car, go to the KFCs, pick up a great meal, and drop something by here. Bring it to Jorge at the station, and then Jorge will be able to bring it to me as soon as he has a few free minutes. Anyway, thanks to the local KFC operators in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. We appreciate everything they do for the station, for the show, and for sports across the valley. They've been great benefactors. Really appreciate everything that they do. A national, international company, and the local ties here in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman really getting it done for the Central San Joaquin. The other reminder from our longtime sponsors at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing is about the weather. Again, Lee's been in the Central Valley since 1981. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. I've had them in to do work even during COVID. They were just terrific, very reasonably priced, and very timely. So give them a call, 825-5337. That's 825-LEES or leesair.com on the web. Anything you need, Central Air Plumbing, Heating, or Roofing. Keep in mind that Central Air is going to be used in a pretty big hurry, because once we get to February, we're closing in once again on the very long and elongated spring and summer of Fresno, California. So keep that in mind, even though it's kind of cool right now. Go over the forecast in just a minute. Also want to remind you that they sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline. That's how we bring up guests like our de facto co-host Jackson Moore today, and how Phil not only brings up his guests, but also callers from the general public. So mark it down, Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. As far as the forecast goes, the fog advisory actually stretched to about noon today, and I know 99 and on 41, you really had to be careful. It's burning off. It actually, in some parts of town, showed some sunshine earlier today. That can dart in and out of the clouds a little bit, but we're looking at a high of 63 today, a low of 40, and then 63 tomorrow, 60 on Thursday. There is a slight chance of rain in the North Valley overnight. I don't know if it's going to get there or not. We're looking at the Merced area and maybe a little north of that. For us, central part here, maybe we've got a chance of rain coming up. I've talked about this before. The people that actually know what they're doing in regard to the weather will tell you about the modeling and the verifying or the lack thereof. So we're just kind of waiting to see. Right now, temperatures are above normal. So the two 63s today and tomorrow, 60 on Thursday, the lows in the mid-40s, that's where you got to watch out for the fog. And then we have got 62 Friday, 64 Saturday, 68 on Sunday as we rolled into February. I said winter disappeared a long time ago in February, and a 65 on Monday. So creature comforts, very nice in the afternoons, but be careful of the fog in the morning and one more time, and overnight, and one more time we could use some rain, even though we're ahead of schedule. Still, be nice to see all the reservoirs filled before we get to the spring and summer, because we all know we can go months without seeing precip in this town. Anyway, thanks everybody at Lees for allowing us the time. Again, leesair.com, 825-5337, or again, the Lees Air hotline. Give us a call. Or give Phil a call at 559-320-1430. So thanks to Lees. Thanks to Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering. I'll tell you more about the schedule a little bit later on for both stations. And thanks to the local KFC operators in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. All that having been said, let's bring up our de facto co-host. That's right. It's Bark Boy himself, Sir Jackson Moore, BarkBoard.com's king of all he surveys. I just read it the way he writes it. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Nobody believes that. They know you're self-effacing and all of that, and you're a genuinely good guy. People know this, okay, over the years. You're a genuinely good guy, and I am an unapologetic bleep. That's what we have figured out over 30-plus years, because Jackson started with me when he was in diapers. Now I'm in diapers. You see how it works, Jackson? You see how this works on this show? I dare you to comment on that. Nothing. Okay. See? I tee it up for you, and you just walk away from it. That's all. I was talking yesterday. You're Russ Ortiz. You have a chance to stay in game six. You tell Dusty Baker, I'm fine. I'm not tired. I want the ball. I want to finish this. Instead, you just hand the ball to Dusty and you walk away. And there goes your World Series. Not that it bothers me, 24 years later. Are you bothered by it?
You know,
where were you in 2002?
I was about 10 years old, I guess.
You were plenty old enough to get... You were plenty old enough to get irritated. I told you, I'm still mad that Chuck Hiller did not get a bunt down in 1962 in the World Series. And you know what was bad about that? They had a bunch of rainouts, so I kept staying away from kindergarten. I didn't know that kindergarten was voluntary. Or, trust me, I would have stayed home because there were a lot of really good Peter Gunn repeats on after Webster Webfoot on Channel 47. I never would have made the time for kindergarten if I would have known it was voluntary. But I waited and waited for that series and all the rainouts. And when I got back, not only did the Giants lose the series in seven because Hiller couldn't get a bunt down, but I get back to kindergarten at Scandinavian Elementary School. You know what they had done? They had taken my towel, my chair, and my triangle away. They thought I wasn't coming back, Jackson, because I didn't know that you could stay home. I didn't find it out till later on. Though later in my college career, I figured out I could stay home a lot. So that's what I did. So anyway, that having been said, how are things with your Memphis Grizzlies right now?
That's exactly what I was going to say, because your other teams are the Warriors and the 49ers. You can nitpick about some finals. But when your other teams are the Memphis Grizzlies and the Tennessee Titans, you just bask in the glory of those three Giants World Series and don't think about the fourth one they could have gotten.
Your point is well taken, and I've told you this before, and I'll tell you again. The Grizzlies are moving back to Vancouver, and the Titans are going back to Houston. This is what's going to happen. This is my prediction. All right, that's enough of that. Thanks for putting up with me. Drive safely, Jackson. All righty, let's get started here. first of all, anything new in the transfer portal land with football, any commits coming in, anything at all? We talked about the portal is done, but still processing. Anything at all new to talk about commits or people leaving?
Yeah, it has slowed down. I don't think we'll see any departures now. The window's closed, and it's a lot tighter than it has been in the past. We'll see maybe if there's some loopholes after spring, some people will try to figure out. But it looks like the players that have stayed are pretty much locked in at this point, and it's getting a little late for additions. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe a transfer or two shows up on the spring roster that kind of stayed private throughout this process. You know, sometimes that kind of thing happens, but nothing public. I know the Bulldogs had a couple of recruits on campus over the weekend, mostly some late high school targets that they're looking at. Either preferred walk-on or maybe a February signee. You might see one or two of those here for signing day next week instead of the it used to be the big day, of course, and now we'll be lucky to see one or two the way things go. But right now it's contact period for high schoolers, so the staff's on the road. They're visiting high schools and doing in-home visits across the state and beyond with the staff with some hot spots they like to go to. And haven't seen too many offers, but couple have gone out, so it's mostly full speed ahead on the 2027 class right now, and you know, maybe there's a late transfer too they'll try to sneak in at the same time.
Well, you know, in regard to you just brought up, and we've talked about it lately, it's a great point, though, again, to repeat, how radically different things are in not that protracted amount of time, really talking from 2016 to now. We mentioned that when Teddy came in to be coached the first time, head coach the first time, was when we were first looking at early signing day. And I mentioned that I had asked him on air, and he goes, yeah, we're going to have to adjust to that, to early signing day. Now that has been pushed back by transfer portal and freedom of movement and NIL and all of that stuff. But you're so right that for so many years, this was the great anticipation time of the year, because we would be looking for that first Wednesday in February. And like I said, the quaintness, Jackson, of waiting for the chug of the old fax machine, right? I mean, literally, all of us doing live broadcasts, standing around the fax machine in Pat Hill's office, waiting for it to chug its way to see if that is the next commit coming through. How long ago does that seem now?
Yeah, it's a lot more streamlined nowadays, but I can tell you, sometimes there's still some of that pressure feeling inside the locker room on signing day, at least the December one. You might have a player that hasn't signed yet or gets cold feet at the last second. There's a ton of phone calls, so more so waiting for an email than a fax to show up, though.
Yeah, well, again, when we first started doing that, I don't think we had running water or electricity. I'm just doing that before the emailers do it. It hurts less coming from me, okay? Because I'll bring up something in 1919 at Fresno State, and somebody will say, oh, was that your senior year? That kind of thing, okay? So I try to take the body blow myself, Jackson, before it's coming my way. All right, either that or just don't look at the email server while we're on the air, one of the two. All right, I do want to ask you about a bigger world issue here, though, and this applies to football and certainly to basketball. But the change in right now at Fresno State, we know this as we shift toward basketball, that you've got the question about exactly what is going to happen with Vance and the current tenure of he and the coaching staff. We've talked about the end of this year, the second year, that there's a reduction in the salary and that you can at that point jettison the current coaching staff with relative ease. You've also pointed out many times when I brought this up that it actually makes more sense to wait if you're going to do something until after year three. But beyond that, the change in how you have to approach looking for a coach. I want Vance to succeed. I think this team has made progress. I hope they're going to stay the course, but I realize that that decision will rest upon Saul and Garrett. But I did want to ask you, Jackson, in regard to what Lane Kiffin said when he took the LSU job. And he said, and, you know, we know Lane well, and he sometimes does not let truth get in the way of a good story, all right? But he said, with a straight face, that he really was not aware of precisely what the monetary value was of his contract, but he was much more concerned about NIL monies to spend than how much he's making. Now, you can break out laughing anytime you'd like, but the bottom line is there is an underlying truth to that, in that coaches have to be concerned in this day and age of how much money their school can spend through the benefactors and the school itself. But also the schools have to wonder, with any given coach, if he has the financial wherewithal to not only bring in players, but to keep them here. So with that as a backdrop, the legitimacy of that, how difficult is the decision going to be at Fresno State if you've got a coach who can bring substantial monies when others may not be able to, Jackson, vis-a-vis the fact that you want this program to move forward as you get to the new conference? How complicated is this process right now because of that push and pull on both sides? What the school can bring to the coach, which is important to the coach, but what the coach can bring to the school, which heretofore has never been an issue prior to NIL.
Yeah, it is complicated, and I think you probably got both ends of the spectrum right there with Fresno State's biggest two programs. I think, you know, if you're on the football side, you know, you want to make sure that you can probably supply enough for your NIL for your coach, maybe then the other way around, just because there's a lot more infrastructure, I'd say. And, you know, let's say, I don't want to use Coach Ince directly as an example, but just if you're a coach at a school, and let's say you've got $5 million to spend and you're winning, and another school in the same conference, let's say they find a way to put $10 million together and maybe give you a raise on your salary, and they offer you an offer to come over there, you know, I think that would be a hard thing to turn down if you're a coach trying to put together the best product and be the most competitive you can be, and someone's going to give you twice the budget to go get players. Even if you're within a conference, you know, that wouldn't have been a discussion before, but I think now it would be. So it's important, I think, on that side of things, that Fresno State does its own job in-house to make Fresno State an attractive football program for coaches to be at. And then on the basketball side, you know, then you're kind of on the other end of things, where a large reason I think Coach Wahlberg was hired was because, you know, the NIL was going to come with him. And if you do get rid of him, it probably leaves with him. And then you got to find a way to generate it yourself, or you got to find a coach that's got it in his back pocket. And it's probably, you know, not going to be a local source, just because there aren't many of them, and Wahlberg was one of them. So I think if you want to be competitive post-Wahlberg, whether it's next year or if Wahlberg does great and it's way down the road, you know, you're going to have to find a coaching candidate that's probably got some significant financial ties one way or another, or you're going to have to find money within the community to replace the million plus that Coach Wahlberg is able to generate, and that's just not going to fall out of the sky. So it's the same issue with the money, but two very different stories right on the same campus.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked so often about viewing the same game but from different sides of the stadium, right? And that's sort of where you're at with NIL. And on the one hand, you can make, irrespective of the sport, irrespective of the specific sport, but obviously we're referencing football and men's basketball because they are the primary money generators everywhere. But you are saying, is the onus on the university? Well, I guess if you have a legendary coach, a coach who's of high esteem, who's being sought after because he wins like a Lane Kiffin, then yes, the onus is on the university to not only pay him a ton of money, but to make sure the NIL money is there. By the same token, if you've got a coach that wants you to take a chance on him, then he probably has to bring funds along with him. So it is the same deal, but being viewed from two different directions, and maybe both can coexist. I don't know. I guess it depends upon the expectation of the university. But what I am curious about, Jackson, when we start to evaluate coaches, and again, I'm going to make this clear what I've said about this. I'm looking at a two-year evaluation for basketball. Last year and this year taken as a singular entity of roughly 60 games. Right now, I like what I'm seeing this year, even though they are not winning every game. They have taken a step forward. If this continues to move forward, then I think there's a real chance for that third year. Obviously, if the wheels come off now the rest of the way and we're going to go over the schedule, then I can see where at the end of this second year you say, okay, it is time to make the change as we go to the new conference. I'm hoping that is not going to be the case, because if it's not, it means this team has made even greater progress. We'll see. I'll wait and see. Pulling for Vance. I know how much he wants this to work. I want it to work desperately. But at this point, number one, I'm not judge, jury, period, which is a good thing for everybody, by the way. But also, even if I were, I would be waiting. But so far, they have, you know, put an entertaining kind of product out on the field, or in this case, field of play, the court. But they also, Jackson, still have a lot of work to do. We'll get to that. But what I'm curious about, when we start to talk about how a team is structured, we usually talk about, when you hire a coach, solid on X's and O's, the ability to put a team together that can be competitive, can be entertaining, etc. But if you have a guy out there, and he's brilliant with that, but is devoid of the ability to bring NIL monies, can you afford to bring that individual, whoever he might be, can you afford to bring him into an environment like a state institution like Fresno State, where you just don't have the resources around without him bringing it along himself? I mean, does it preclude a lot of people that might be brilliant coaches because of that reason?
Yeah, and I think that goes both ways as well. I mean, if this is hypothetically the most money you can bring in, then you're still losing to South Carolina Upstate and Bakersfield and Northridge. You know, you could have a coach that brings in a lot of money, but it doesn't necessarily equal wins automatically. I do think, you know, it's tough to point those examples as a reason not to continue on the current path, just because I think this team has grown since then, and they're playing very competitive in conference play, and it's looking a lot better. And you can hope that they can make a jump from year two to year three. You know, if you cut that journey short, let's say the team has some momentum and you don't continue down that path, and then you bring in someone that might be a great X's and O's coach but doesn't have the talent, you know, then it's going to be tough for them too. So finding both is pretty rare, and it kind of feels a lot like, you know, on the football side of things, it seems like with assistant coaches, a lot of times you either get a great recruiter at a position coach or a great X's and O's guy, and it's just tough to find someone that checks all the boxes, and the guys that do typically get poached away pretty quick. So I think you just got to do the best to find your niche until you can put yourself in a situation where you can foster and sustain all of those things. Right now, of course, both the team and the program have some building to do. And I think this year has been a step in the right direction, but they do need to finish it off with some momentum too.
Well, so often we have viewed the job of a coach at college, as Pat Hill has brought up, and as Jeff Tedford referenced, by the way, when he stayed that first year under Pat as the OC. He was the OC, of course, for Jim Sweeney through Jim's final year, which was 1996, and then stayed with Pat through 97, and then left for Oregon to be the OC, and there from Cal and to Cal and all of that as a head coach. But when we talked to Jeff, he had said when he was leaving, and I brought this up many times on the air, leaving after the 97 year, Pat's first year, he said that he needed to go somewhere else to complete his resume and everything else. Pat had done the same thing, leaving Sweeney's coaching staff to go other places before he came back as head coach. And what Jeff said was that through all of that, he found out in 1997 under Pat what Jeff did not know about being a head coach at college. He said he learned more about what it took to be the CEO of a program in that 1 year under Pat than any other time in his career, because as opposed to the National Football League, and you hear this all the time now, right, Jackson, that the stuff at the colleges, the line has been blurred between college and professional sport because you're paying the players, and so they should be held accountable. And I was a guy who said for many, many years that you need to treat the college players differently because they're not being paid. And I would say, yes, if you're being paid a ton of money, then you probably are in line to be held accountable. But there's still a huge difference between the National Football League in college football or the NBA in college basketball, and that is if there's a front office where there's a director of player personnel, general manager, what have you. As a coach, you may not have a lot of say over the acquisition of your talent, but you also don't have the burden of being the one who has to acquire the talent. how much more daunting is it with NIL for any coach who is basically told collegiately, you are responsible for the administration of the program. You are responsible for the X's and O's. You are also responsible, at least partially, for the monies to bring in and retain talent. I mean, Jackson, that line of differentiation is very, very difficult for a coach who has been immersed in X's and O's, but not the burden of being that CEO slash fundraiser, right?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that with Coach Wahlberg as of late. When he got hired, I knew he has been well-versed in X's and O's. He's done a whole lot of that over his career, but I wasn't sure how in tune he was with the portal and NIL and all that stuff, and I was just really stunned how fast, you know, they came in with a plan right away, and they knew how to work it, and I think they got hit a little bit harder than they expected as far as talent that they had connections to, maybe getting outbid for, and even players that they felt they had just about sealed the deal with, and then a late offer comes in where they get doubled or tripled the price by a Power Four school. But the thing that factors into me is that so much of it, you know, acquiring the talent, you're basically going for best available. Who's in your budget and who wants to come here? And you don't necessarily get to hand pick the exact type of players that you want. And so I think it's created a kind of a roster where you've got a little bit of everything, but maybe you're not as great of a 3-point shooting team as you'd like to be. And, you know, you're one Nathan Zulame injury away from not being able to run the press as much as you want to, where, you know, if you could handpick your guys a little bit more, or if the money was unlimited and you could get whoever you wanted, they would probably have a roster that could full court press and shoot even more and better percentage from 3-point range. But I think you get the best 15 guys you can afford and just kind of go on the fly of what their strengths are and what they can do and hope you've got enough to get by. And I think this year's team has been competitive, but it's probably not exactly the style or the pace that maybe the full Wahlberg experience could be.
Yeah, he has. I was talking to Furtick about it last week. Jack will be with me tomorrow, of course. That Vance has altered that approach a little bit. It is not the breakneck pace that he would like. The same way that McCarthy, I think, has altered the approach for the women's program right now for the same reason. You're trying to acquire the proper depth of talent to play the way you'd want. And right now it's a work in progress. And it is, unfortunately, one where, as opposed to the old days where you acquire and as long as they stay eligible academically, you're going to be okay, that the acquisition and retention are running side by side. And so every time you go to acquire, you have to worry not only about furthering the program with more acquisition, but you can't have the loss of players as well. Deshaun Gorey is a case in point. It'd be the height of naivete to think, Jackson, that there are not going to be offers for Deshaun Gorey if he's going to continue to go off of 30-plus point games and double digits and rebounds. You are really going to have to fight like hell financially to keep him around, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And your only hope, basically, in this stage is that there's a relationship there and that he wants to stay with Wahlberg and maybe spend another year before cashing in. But I mean, those offers are going to be there. And unless a huge wave of finances comes Fresno State's way, they're not going to have the budget to match those offers. So that makes it tough. And I think that's another thing as well. You know, when you think about his high school days and the systems that were created, you know, a lot of that was not just putting it together at the high school level, but these were mainly players and young student athletes that had been in the system since like fifth or sixth grade. And you're talking about a 7-year process or so for these kids going through AAU, the high school, the varsity, and they've got that full court press down perfected, where in this day and age, I mean, the Bulldogs only had what, 3 players come back from last year's roster. And I don't think it'll be quite that much turnover this year, but it may be fairly close after the season's all said and done between some seniors and some players that are going to be hot commodities in the portal, and also some players that maybe didn't pan out that you got to try to replace. So there's just not enough time, I think, to do all the things without roster retention that you would like to do from a schematic point.
I'll tell you one thing, after watching BYU in Arizona last night, in Provo. We had talked that Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, is a big basketball guy, and he's got to be delighted because for all that the football programs were well-balanced. I know Texas Tech obviously took a big step forward, mainly because they had a multi-billionaire decided to be their benefactor. But it was a well-balanced but not great, great year for the Big 12 in football. In basketball, this is a serious seven-bid conference right now, so one shudders to think what competition would have been like there if we're so safe where they're at the moment. So it's good that they're where they're at right now. The Mountain West has been a good conference, but this is not one of its great years. So the window of opportunity is there. And to your point, you know, we've been told that guys like Gorey will stay as long as Vance is here. The thing I brought up with Matt Norville the other day was Kennedy, the pitcher of the year softball-wise for Stanford, was given a $600,000 a year offer a couple years ago, and nobody thought that she would leave Stanford. Yet Texas Tech came along with a $1 million offer, and you talk about the offer you can't refuse, right? Well, you wonder about that. You wonder about players like Gorey. Can you hang on to him? All you can do right now is the old Al Davis, just win, baby, and hope that the environment carries the day. Also, I know that Vance has other money sources, Jackson. To your knowledge, is that going to come to fruition when we're talking about $4 million plus, et cetera? Where are we at with that? Do you know?
Yeah, you know, I'm not fully sure. I think in general, if the team was going to take a step forward this year, I think some more dollars should probably become available, and it seems like they're on that path. But I know there's discussion about a big chest of money that might be available, and I just don't know for sure if that's happening or not.
And look, I talked to Vance off air, people know, but I do not ask him about that. That is none of my business, and that is something that I don't think he would comment on anyway right now, except what we've talked about, that he is working as hard as he can to make this work. And as we go over the schedule, you have intimated on air, and I certainly understand that if it were you right now as it stands, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you would be looking to bring Vance back for at least next year. Is that your point of view right now, understanding that the rest of how the season plays out could impact that? As we talk right now toward the end of January, is that your mindset? It would be best for year three for this program for Vance to be here?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think 9-11 and 3-6 isn't all that sexy by any means, but it is definitely a step forward. I know last year was a worst case scenario in a lot of ways, but it's definitely a step ahead this year. I'm also very encouraged by the crowds the last two Saturdays. And it feels like it's been a long time since crowds have shown up like that and been that engaged. And at least they were treated to a win in one of the two against Wyoming. I think that's a big deal. I think I don't like to play the what-if game too much, but I mean, they did have about four or five pretty close losses along the way that this record could be pretty appetizing if you get another year under their belt and they can win those types of games. And I also do think from a logistics standpoint, even if it doesn't go so hot the rest of the way, it does make things a lot easier to move on after the third year than the second year. And I think there's been enough positive progression to give a third year a shot for sure.
Looking at the schedule, and we have brought this up the last couple of games, it would be nice if Fresno State could define who the go-to guy is at the end of the game. We know that Collins is the guy who's going to handle the ball. What we still haven't determined yet is where the ball belongs, because outside of Collins, and maybe Gorey will develop this role, there isn't the give me the ball, get out of the way kind of guy. And it is very tricky, as you and I have discussed, Jackson, to have your distributor also be the guy who takes that final shot, because that the danger there, the other four guys end up standing around. Because it's not that they're upset. It's just that they feel as though, you know what, he's the guy who's going to decide it. Maybe we'll crash the board, whatever. But so far, Collins hasn't been the guy who is absolutely nails at the end of the game. Jake is a guy who's certainly capable, but also he is not the most athletic guy in the world. He's not going to break people down on the dribble all the time. So they're still trying to figure that part out. do you think that that is going to be defined in fairly short order, whether it's Gorey or whomever, so that the Bulldogs have the opportunity to beat other teams the way the Bulldogs in crunch or clutch time have been beaten by one guy that the other team knew was the guy they wanted to have the ball in his hands to take the big shot? We saw Henley do this last weekend. Are the Bulldogs going to find that guy, and will that be the difference maker for the rest of this particular year if they play these close games all the time?
Yeah, you know, we touched on this a little while back, and I was conflicted. I kind of felt like Heidbreder, in a lot of ways, you know, you want to get him the ball, but you don't necessarily just want to give it to him and make something happen. Not necessarily the greatest as far as creating, but I think the Wyoming game came shortly after our conversation, and I know in the post game, Wahlberg was very adamant, said, you know, when the game's tight, we want the ball in Jake's hands, and in that case, it worked out against Wyoming. Especially if it's a situation where the Bulldogs are ahead or maybe it's tied and they have the ability to draw a foul, you have to have the ball, I think, in Jake's hands, because if he gets to the line, I mean, it's basically two free points. And there's been games where the wrong guy has been at the line and it didn't work out. So I think that's one end of it. But, you know, if you're down two or three and there's 20 seconds left and the game's on the line, I don't necessarily know how great I feel of just giving the ball to Jake and saying score two or three points. You know, I'd rather them try to find him open by driving first. And also, in that case, it might be best to, especially with the way Gorey's playing as of late, try to feed him the ball and just let him try to create something. Because the other part of it, you know, we've seen possessions late in games where the Bulldogs didn't even get a shot off. It turned over, the time ran out. So at least you know Gorey's the guy. He's going to at least get a look, and whether it goes in or not, you feel pretty good about him at least getting a chance.
Well, you're right, and we've talked about the fact that Collins is starting to learn that when you beat somebody off the dribble, you can't over-penetrate or you allow the bigs to step up. So that mid-range has to be there. Whether he can make that shot all the time, you don't know. Jake is a terrific cutter to the basket. So if you can break down the defense and if you can get the defense to commit, and see, this is the thing we've talked about, Jackson, the fear factor, right? Whether we're talking football or basketball, if you have to change your defense because you're worried about somebody, you know, the Steph Curry syndrome, right? The mere presence out there means the defense is scrambling. That's how guys get open. That's how guys get backdoor cuts. That's how they get uncontested looks. But if the other team can play you straight up 5-on-5 and they don't really think you have anybody that can particularly break them down off the dribble, then you're not going to get those great opportunities. And even a willing passer like Collins is going to have trouble if he doesn't have those wings. Gorey may be the one guy that you can hand him the ball. He is a willing three-point shooter, but probably more effective going to the bucket, though he is really effective if you can get him on a wing, obviously in transition. It's still something that's a work in progress, and without question, Fresno State has been hurt in close games by the other team knowing where that ball belongs, meaning the coaches of the other team and, more importantly, the other four guys on the floor. They knew who should take that shot late. The Bulldogs are still trying to figure that out. To their credit, they're close in these games. They just haven't been able to break through, period. So be nice to see them start to do that in a fairly big hurry here. I did want to ask you in regard, and there's a lot more to go over that we'll do on Friday, in regard to the rest of the schedule, Jackson, I see two games that I'll be surprised if they lose, and that's the Air Force game on the road this weekend. I know it's problematic on the road, and the San Jose State game at home. There are two games I'd be very surprised if they win, and those are the road trips to Logan and the Phoenix to play Utah State and, of course, to play Grand Canyon. The rest of the games, I think they could go either way, home or road. How do you feel about that particular view?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement there. I see quite a few swing games. I see some that you got to get San Jose State at home, Air Force at home. I mean, it's hard to guarantee a road win, but if they can't get it at Air Force over the weekend, that's going to be a tough one to take. Then you've got some home games like UNLV. I mean, I don't think it's a given you're going to win that game, but if you want to try to get over the hump a little bit in the conference standings and the win totals, that's one of those types of games you got to get. I think at Colorado State and Boise State at home late February is going to be a critical stretch. Maybe even you throw New Mexico at home. I don't have a great confidence the Bulldogs are going to win that game, but with Deion and at home, maybe they give them a run. But at Colorado State, the Rams, I think, are going to be a lot more competitive than they were in the Save Mark Center. And then Boise State's been so hot and cold. Those two games, I think, are going to have a big swing as the season comes to a close of the regular season.
As you look at this team right now, you know, February is where it's decided so much of the time. We talk about March Madness. If you remember, Rodney Terry, we used to talk about, he was expert in disaster maintenance. The team would seem to be taking on water big time at the end of January, but invariably they'd have a good February, and it gave you some degree of confidence going into the tournament itself, although they only cashed in with the NCAAs in 2016. Is this team right now entertaining enough that you think that the community is really going to embrace it, and that gives you that positive vibe that this is going to be the kind of year at the end that you're going to look back and say, hey, you know what, I saw the signs coming into January and they have matured even more? Or are you really still the jury out on that?
Yeah, well, three of the last four home games are going to be Saturdays, and I think it should draw well regardless of what's going on. I think this next four game stretch is going to be critical as far as setting the table. You're probably losing at Utah State. Nevada is going to be tough. UNLV is not a gimme. And then they got to win at Air Force, of course. So, you know, you just don't want to come out of this four game run looking at 1-3, perhaps, or for sure not 0-4. If you can just kind of get out of there treading water and staying even, I think it sets the table for some good Saturday environments in the Save Mark Center. New Mexico should draw. Boise State should draw. So, based off what we saw the last couple of weekends, I think there's an opportunity to keep growing on that as long as the team doesn't tailspin, and I don't think they're going to outside of injury. I think they've got just enough right now. One bad injury could derail that, but otherwise I think they are a team, except for just a couple of games. Utah State's going to be one of them. You just expect them to be competitive just about everywhere else, and if they can knock off New Mexico at home on national TV, that would be a huge one. And a win against Boise State, whether they're hot or cold, would be a big one too. So I hope people come out and check those games out.
As I let you go, Paul brought it up yesterday, and I agree with him. It would be nice if this team one time could have all wing three-point shooters hot for a game just to see what it's like, because the Bulldogs have kind of defined the make-or-miss league kind of statements we make about the NBA. They've got three-point shooters. When they're on, this team is great, or at least very good. When they're not, this team is not very good. They don't force defenses to change what they're doing. And what you want to do is have enough legit threats out there that you can back cut, you can get dunks, you can get layups, because the other team is afraid of your ability to shoot from distance, not we'll wait and see every game to see if Fresno State is hot or not. This has been a very inconsistent team, a better shooting team than last year. But as far as having everybody have those kinds of nights together, that has not happened. We'll see if that does take care of itself as we get into February. Jackson, I'll let you go. Special still on the board right now?
Yeah, it's currently just $1 for your first 2 months if you want to try it out and get in that way. Get in on some of the portal stuff, recruiting stuff going on. It's going to be a busy time for the staff there, and head into spring ball on that $1. So I hope people head to buckboard.com and take advantage of that.
Well worth it. I will talk to you on Friday, my friend. Always appreciate the time. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right. Defective host Jackson Moore. Take a break. Tell you about the schedule. Hand it off to Phil. Two outstanding hours coming up with his fine show, and then he and Paul Metters off to Bullard tonight for SJM and Bullard basketball on 1430, hockey on 790. Tell you about the schedule after this as the Bulldog Hour continues on this Tuesday on Central Valley Sports Leader 1430 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 252, a couple minutes ago in the show, handed off to Phil, his outstanding show behind the bench. 2 hours today, and then he's got Terrific matchup between Bullard and SJM, 6:15 the pre tonight from Bullard. He and Paul Metters will be there, so stay tuned for that. Hockey over on 790, the resurgent Sharks, who are actually competitive again, will be front and center. The Lakers a little bit later in the week. I'll tell you all about the schedule right now, mainly because our friend Ed Dunkel allows me the time with his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering, sponsoring this segment. Again, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. And again, we commend Ed for the great fundraising he does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering there on campus. Ed, a proud graduate, and a lot of those grads from the Lyles College of Engineering go to work for Ed at Precision. The goal, as always, to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years. And again, we thank Ed for everything he does for the university, for the Valley as a whole, and for this station, that's for sure. Now, as far as the schedule goes, again, 6:15, you've got the pregame as Bullard and San Joaquin Memorial will play. And the Sharks are over on 790 tonight. And you know, I kid around about the Sharks a little bit, but it is heartening to see after a lot of down years that the Sharks are back playing competitive hockey. And also, by the way, have the game at Vancouver tonight, 6:30 the pre, 7 o'clock they'll drop the puck up in British Columbia. But you have Macklin Celebrini, who, by the way, is a native son of Vancouver, starring for the team. His dad, Rick, is the head of medical for the Warriors. So Celebrini is a Canadian, but someone who has spent most of his life in the Bay Area, so it's great to have him with the Sharks. And if you have a chance, please listen. Dan Rusinowski has been a longtime voice and a longtime friend of ours, and so it's nice to have the Sharks, who should have won the Stanley Cup, by the way, in 2016, back as a competitive team right now. They're 26-21-3, so being over 500, that's a real revelation for where they have been lately. Also, the Lakers a little bit later in the week coming up, and for us, college basketball over the weekend, and then a week, or actually now 2 weeks from this past, or this last Sunday, it'll be time for the Super Bowl, and we'll have that full coverage from Westwood One. And Phil, by the way, will be on Radio Row beginning next Monday, so he'll be up in Santa Clara at Levi's throughout the week, so stay tuned for that. All right, the other reminders here when we talk about the schedule, you have got Phil normally 3 to 6 Monday through Friday with his fine show Behind the Bench. It gets altered as it is tonight by Play by Play. He also on Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our good buddy Rod Evadikian. Best furniture on the planet, El Paso across from River Park. Nothing like it in all of California. The great conversation of Phil's show on Thursdays, and some good eats when Phil is around. And keep in mind, stop by Fashion Furniture any day. The January clearance is underway right now, and another great benefactor for athletics in the Valley has been for a long time our friends at Fashion Furniture, meaning Rod Evadikian and company, and we thank Rod for everything he does for the Valley as well. Talk about Paul Metters being with Phil tonight for basketball. Paul has two fine shows on 790, 6 to 7 on Wednesday evenings, Sunbird Sports Show, all about Fresno Pacific Athletics. And then his outstanding and long-running show on Saturday mornings, live from First String Sports on 1430, 10 a.m. to noon. It's First String Sports for Central Valley Sports Report. We're with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number 1 at att.net. First names are fine. Everything for the station, 1430, ESPNFresno.com. You get the live links and podcasts there. And then the final reminders go out, one, to our friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, because they bring guests up for this show and Phil's and callers from the general public for Phil's show. Mark it down, Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. And then finally, one more mention about our friends at KFC, the local operators in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Right now, they have the Big Bowl special for the Big Bowl game coming up in just a couple of weeks. They have the $5 bowls, classic or spicy, on sale right now for a limited time. We're talking the creamy mashed potatoes, the sweet corn, melty cheese, and crispy nuggets, all stacked in one bowl. You can go classic or bring the heat with the bold spicy flavor. Either way, It is a great, great offer for just $5. Also, for $5, you grab the Maddie's Cheesy Nuggy Gravy Bowl, crispy nuggets, rich gravy, and plenty of cheese. No shortcuts, and I would love to have about 5 of those bowls right now, if you don't mind, Jorge. So, big, I don't know if my wife wants me to have 5 bowls at once, but Jorge, I'm going to take a stand today and say I deserve 5 bowls. Bring them on by. Just meet me around the back side of the house, okay? Trust me. Anyway, big flavor, big comfort, just $5 at the participating local KFCs for a limited time. Also, keep in mind that you've got the offer on Tuesdays, the $10 8-piece or 8 tenders offer standing as always. So great offers from the local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. So we thank those gentlemen. We thank everybody at Precision Civil Engineering and everybody at Lee's Air Plumbing Heating. And also thanks to Jackson Moore and to Jorge. Phyllis coming up, then basketball tonight on 1430, hockey on 790. I'll see you with Jack Ferdy tomorrow on KFIG Fresno.